Juan.
Hola.
Okay, welcome back.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Welcome back to Film Fatales, a podcast where we talk about iconic female performances in film.
Work. We got it.
My name's Chase. Fuck, I almost had it.
I'm Jeff.
And today we're finishing off a month of episodes that I actually have found extremely fun and engaging and exciting to do.
So fun.
Yeah, that's believable. And that is our Oscars month, where we've been going over Best Actress nominees for the 96th Academy Awards. And we are finishing off with one of the leaders in the race to win Best Actress, and that is Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes. Work. I can't believe we're here. We're at the end of the review season. As we're drumming up for March 7th ceremony. Are you going to be tuning in live from your home, or are you going to watch it with someone else elsewhere?
I usually watch the Oscars. Where will I be on March 7th? No, I'll be back in Toronto. I usually watch the Oscars live. Maybe I'll try to find like some sort of like viewing thing in Toronto. We should go to a viewing thing. We should go.
Should
one.
We do it
like,
together?
That would be fun. That'd yeah, be fun. We should. That would be fun.
Well, no, March 7th, I have a gig. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, fuck you. I'll go with someone else.
I'm sorry.
Anyways,
I'll be
tuning in, though.
I watch TikTok clips of acceptance speeches chop into 10 seconds.
But you know
increments.
What? They actually make it like, I may be weird. Like, I feel like especially nowadays, because I like to watch like these full ceremonies, like these 3-hour ceremonies. And I'm usually like doing work or something at the same time.
Yeah.
But I do like to watch the whole thing live. But they make it so hard. Like, they're truly not doing themselves any favor with this generation, like the streaming generation. By making this shit, like, if you don't have cable, it's so hard to find this shit, especially in Canada. Like, it's so hard to find live streams if you don't have some sort of, like, television subscription.
Yeah. What do you... I have never watched live. What do you have in order to watch it?
Sorry, what did you say? You cut off.
I've never watched it live, so I was wondering what kind of subscription do you need?
Like Paramount Plus, I think, does it, but who the fuck has Paramount Plus? And in Canada,
gays, the gays like who watch Drag Race, they're on.
But
it.
Like, that's not even where you watch Drag Race in Canada. So like, sure, in America, easy enough, but in Canada, there's like nowhere to find the shit. Like, I'm going on. I think I was going on like Facebook fucking live streams last year. I was like, where can I find this ceremony?
Anyways. Not the Facebook live stream.
Anyways, the movie is. It's described as an epic Western crime drama set in 1920s Oklahoma, focusing on the Osage Nation actually was crazy. I didn't know about them. They were some of the wealthiest people, one of the wealthiest communities in the world at the time, because they discovered oil on their lands and they retained their mineral rights over this oil. And so anyways, we can get into that later. They had a lot of money, and they white people, it's a really interesting like dichotomy switch, because white people would work as their drivers and their cleaners, and like, you know, it was honestly kind of cunt. Like, when at the opening of the movie, when they were describing that, I was like, this is like work. Like, I have never heard of this. And then of course white people, as they do, have to ruin everything, and they start killing the Osage people to steal their oil. So right off the bat, it's like a really heavy premise. Topic to make a film about, for sure.
Totally. And it's an adaptation.
Is it an adaptation of what?
Yeah, it's a book, which,
right, but a nonfiction book, yeah.
Yeah,
like just like a factual book about what happened.
Yeah, I didn't learn about this history piece before. So, watching this made me like learn a bit more about like what happened, and I think the movie also references a similar massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. where a really affluent black neighborhood was being wiped out, which sets off the premise for the TV series Watchmen. Have you watched it?
I haven't watched it.
It's a fucking incredible TV series. So there's a little bit of a parallel between the two pieces of history. And that really like helped me kind of locate things a little bit more. But yeah, it's definitely like a dense premise and a dense setting. But the movie kind of
I don't know if I would use the word dense. Like, I would just say, like, a really, like, there's a lot of weight to it. Like, what this film is being made about is something that's super heavy and, like, honestly dangerous territory for a filmmaker. Like, there's a lot of responsibility, I think, in bringing a story like this to the world stage.
Yes, totally. But I do think it really tracks with, like, Martin Scorsese. Like, some of the subject choices that he has been working on since, like, him as a director. A recent watch of Martin Scorsese would be Faith, featuring Spider-Man. Sorry, that should have been more. Andrew Garfield.
Not you saying Spider-Man.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. That was, like, I think he likes to talk about like a figure, like he does a lot of character drama but talks a bit more humanity and like culture and society mm-hmm. in a historical period. Faith was like one of the most like dense, sorry I keep using the dense, historical, really like heavy watch that I've seen,
right?
So yeah, I think this film kind of like tracks with like the collaboration with Leonardo DiCaprio and also Robert De Niro as well.
They have been long-time
collaborators.
Obviously, we're focusing on Lily Gladstone, who plays Molly, who's an Osage woman, and the eventual wife of Ernest, who's played by Leo, and then Ernest's relationship with it's his uncle. He's the nephew of the deputy sheriff, who's played by Robert De Niro, who ends up being, of course, the corrupt piece of shit. So I just want to preface saying I think it's important to note, because there was obviously films like this directed by a white man, there's going to be questions about like authenticity and consent and disclosure. And I do think it's important to note that there was like actually an incredible amount of Osage involvement in this film. And not just in a way that feels like of course there were consultations from the inception of the film, but that's not where it ended. Like it wasn't like, oh, we consulted so we can do whatever we want with the film. Like there were continuous consultations, and then on top of that, I think it was like 40-45 Osage actors were in the film, and then even more background actors. Like so many people in this film were like, so employment was given to them as well, like monetary compensation, you know what I mean? Like it was just like I appreciated it seemed like the scope and the depth of their involvement as compared to how this really could have gone on a much more surface level, because Martin Scorsese really has the power to make this film without involving anyone. Like he could get this film made because he's such a well-respected, famous person. Like he could get this film made without any involvement, and so I do appreciate the depth in which they seem to be involved.
Yeah, I mean, the Osage part plays a huge part of this narrative, so mm-hmm. realistically, he cannot do it without any of it.
He can't do it well, but I guarantee you, there's someone out there who would have tried to make this film without involving Osage people.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Totally. And without what seems like the film at its core, it's about a relationship, but all the injustice and violence that surrounds that relationship. And I do think, like, overall, the five films that we've seen in this category, they're all relationship dramas in a way. But out of this one, this actually, the scope is way larger. It's like a more about the society and also a particular piece of history, which also goes back to like what we're talking about. This reads, it's more like heavy and also factual. It's more, you know, it's a part of history that I don't think American audience really know a lot of, myself included, obviously. What are your quick thoughts, like, check in with, like, about the movie in terms of, like, is it your first Lily Gladstone movie? Are there, like, certain parts?
What has Lily Gladstone done before this? Sorry if I'm ignorant, but I have no idea what she's done. Like, she was new to me in this film.
She's also new to me as well, but I'm excited.
And I first saw this film end of October, I want to say, in theaters. And I went to a VIP theater because I was like, this movie is so fucking long. 3.5 hours, girl. 3.5 hours? I was like, I when I sat down, I was like, I'm going to fall asleep in this VIP lounger for sure. And then I also thought, there's definitely going to be at least an hour of this film that I'm gonna think needed to be cut out. But I actually can say pretty strongly, one, I didn't fall asleep. And two, I actually think the runtime of this film is justified.
You got cut off. What were you saying? And two,
I just said, I think that the runtime of this film is justified.
Yes, I think it's a classic, like, Martin Scorsese fashion. It's just gonna be long. Like, it's just gonna be long, but I think it's justified, again, back because of the scope and the particular history of it. It needs to be. Otherwise, it's just gonna be like a watered down, kind of rushed through version of it.
This is a very ambitious movie. Like, this is probably the most ambitious movie. And I've seen all of the Best Picture noms except for Zone of Interest, which I will see before the ceremony. But this feels like, of all of the ones I've watched so far, for sure the most ambitious undertaking.
Okay, so the question is, even though it's an ambitious film, which I agree, do you think it's the most ambitious performance by Lady Gaston? I think we'll talk about Lady Gaston in detail in a bit. Or do you want to talk about it now?
Let's get into our letterbox reviews, honey. We have a schedule on this show now.
Letterboxing. Let's talk.
Should I go first this time?
Yes. Go.
I lost my review, actually. I clicked away. Okay, wait. It doesn't really get into Lily Gladstone, but we will obviously get into her, and it honestly doesn't get into much. I don't know how to read it. Jeff, how do I read this out? It says,
describe what you're seeing.
It's like, it's like nobody, colon, okay, blank, and then Leo, yes, the entire movie, colon, and it's just like the stereotypical sad face emoji. Sad face.
The meme, the cat, the grumpy cat, right? I saw someone posted a grumpy cat thing.
And I think that perfectly encapsulates how I felt about Leonardo DiCaprio in this movie. Like, the whole movie, he looks like his face is like sunken. Like, he's like, the whole movie he's like that, and like he was not nowhere near my favorite part of this film.
Totally. I think it's intentional. Like, he's like a himbo, like, coming back from the war, and
a hippo,
a himbo, sorry. Is that a himbo? Is that the right term anymore? But he's being
a himbo,
He's being manipulated left and right. Like, he's being implied to things. Like, he has this innocence about him.
Yeah.
But also, as the film progresses, you know that he's not as earnest as he says he is.
Oh, she's got wordplay.
I was like, reading the film, was like, whenever I hear the name Ernest, I'm like, okay, English program, English major. Yeah, I find Leonardo DiCaprio like a little more pushed to side. I don't think that's definitely like his performance. I don't think that's his film. Right. At all.
I mean, he was fine, but I guess I'll just explain the way. So obviously, Hale, the deputy sheriff, his goal is to get ownership of the mineral rights to all of this oil, right? Obviously, it's money driven, and to do that, he's having his men, the white men living there, to basically seduce and marry the Osage women so that they have a claim to the mineral rights, and then these women are mysteriously going missing, mysteriously being killed, as a means for him and the white men of Oklahoma to get control of this oil, right? So Leonardo DiCaprio is like this interesting character who I don't think fully understands the corruption that he's being manipulated to partake in, but I definitely think there, I don't know if I can actually say that, because there definitely feels like a moment where he obviously knows what he's doing is wrong. He truly just is dumb. I think his character is really just genuinely really trusting and a little bit stupid. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I think he wasn't expecting to be so involved. I think he genuinely loved Molly to some degree. But then everything, as he slowly realizes he's being part of this scheme, things get blurry and more dangerous. And he's having a hard time like trying to figure out what he is anymore. And he's being corrupted. He's being corrupted by, if the another story is about like corruption, like having this innocent person being brought into the system and then being drafted into like violence and to a person that no longer is able to love someone genuinely, which is kind of his story, which kind of puts it into the B line, like the B plot, the subplot really. Not the most impressive.
What's your Letterboxd review? Because I think it's going to get us into Lily Gladstone more.
The review that I have chosen from Sydney, which they gave it a 4-star rating. They say, Lily Gladstone gives one of the most important performances of the decade. The decade. Leonardo DiCaprio gets spanked. Thank you, Martin Scorsese.
I have a question. When we say the most important of the decade, do we mean just in the last 4 years?
What do you mean? What do you mean four years?
Do we mean like, of the decade? Do we mean the 2020s, or do we mean like 2014 to 2024? Like, how do we determine
that? I think it's 2014 to 2024.
Okay.
I think that's a big statement, and I don't think that's true. Because I think sometimes, like, not to go back to, like, Oscar bait, because I think the whole conversation about Oscar bait flattens the actual message of the film. It could easily be argued, like, oh, this film is, like, Oscar baity, but we have to look at different angles of, like, how do you understand the film? I don't exactly know why they think this is one of the best performances, but this doesn't really like sit as like a, like, I don't know how to grade it right now. I can't think of any like really good performance in a decade.
I don't know. I mean, I don't actually find ranking performances against each other in that way very helpful. I think people make statements like that just to make statements like that. Like, it's a big statement, you know what I mean? And it's like, even if it's not literally true, like, it's just a way to say, to emphasize, be hyperbolic about how much they really enjoyed her performance, right?
People are just galvanized.
So,
yeah.
I mean, what did you think of her performance? It sounds like you hated her, and you hate her, and you hope she never acts again.
She makes me want to watch more of her stuff. I think because I don't know how to, it doesn't click to me yet. I think like just watching it for the first time, there's a lot to process. And also her character, I wouldn't say timid, but like there's a certain kind of quietness to her that I think doesn't really fit into like the traditional American way of understanding a dramatic performance. She's definitely more like a slow burn kind of actor for sure. I remember finished watching it, I didn't really have a really strong impression of her performance. But makes me more excited to watch more of her stuff, just beyond this film. I don't know how maybe you can shed more light on this, but do you have a what do you think about her performance?
I think that she was fantastic. I really left feeling a huge impact from her in this film, especially because it was a really quiet and intentional performance where like as much of the performance is coming from like what's not being said as is what's being said. And we obviously get like a very emotional moments, climactic moments with her where she breaks down because her sisters and her friends and people are being killed, right? Like we get those really big emotional breakdowns, like the one on the stairs. I thought she was wonderful in that scene. That was really hard to watch. But then there's also, she's so like the crux of this film for me is about the stories of these indigenous women. Like that's really what it's about. Like these women who are being exploited by the white man. And she's at a really interesting point where she has such pride for being Osage, and she also has such love for this white man. And she just is so conflicted, especially as these things start to happen, as his involvement starts to become clear. The way that she portrays like that sort of conflict within the character, I just found to be really moving. And it doesn't, and I think that it doesn't always need to be flashy, and it doesn't always need to be like, I feel like especially as queer people, we're always looking for a performance that's really giving, like nonstop screaming. Giving. And this one I think is a little bit, it takes a little bit more work to chew on this performance, but I think that that's kind of what makes it one of my favorites of the group.
Yes. I agree with you, what you're saying. Like the slow realization of the relationship and like how can she still make sense of the world that she's living, and despite seeing so much violence and death,
and she's also, can I say, not a like passive victim to these circumstances. Like she is one of the ones who is actively trying to get this investigated, is actively trying to get this, like she's really at the helm of like trying to figure out who's doing this to the Osage people, right?
Like I think the overarching kind of situation that we're dealing, it's like it can be about anywhere, but I think it's more like woman in a man's world.
Right.
It's a domestic drama, but like because of like it's a such huge and important Osage background, I think that brings out all those like other different really thorny subjects into the film itself. Like colonization, exploitation, and like violence and stuff like that. Like for me, when I was watching this movie, I remember like remembering Lee Gladstone's character as like a steadfast, but she's constantly aware. She's like quiet. She moves slow, but she's hyper aware of things. She has a certain like cat quality to her, movement, and also the way that kind of she does like dialogue as well, which I find it
really
like, such a distinction.
Smart. Molly, like as a character, is really smart, and she's like, I think steadfast is a good way to say it, because she's really like she's a support. Her character is a support for so many different people in her life, and like she deals with a lot of trauma from her family, and she, I think a lot of the conflict comes from being this really sharp, smart woman who is suspicious of Ernest when he tries to like court her, and then allows herself, right, lets herself fall in love with this white man despite some of the conflicts that she's feeling, just to have all of that kind of crumble down, just to have like, it almost feels like towards the end of the film she becomes kind of void of emotion, because like this one time that she's now kind of like let this guard down, let herself fall in love, all of this has happened. Like, I really truly believe at the end of the film that Molly really blames herself for a lot of what happened, which is so sad.
Yeah. Did the film ever address why are the Osage women have a preference over a white man in the movie?
I can't recall what they said about it, but it is talked about. It's spoken about. They're like outside at some sort. It's like some barbecue with the Osage people and the white people in the community coming together. And the women are having a conversation about how many of them are marrying white people. And there's like older Osage women, I believe, who are saying that basically it's a problem. It's because generationally, like through, you know, procreation, they're going to wipe out, right, the Osage people. Like, it's going to be a slow wiping out of the Osage culture. So it is talked about. I wish I noted down the exact quote, but that's kind
of talking
the
about
general
scene,
sentiment.
Are you talking about the scene where the four women were sitting down and like they're using their native tongue to like gossip and...
Sorry, you cut out.
Just like talking about men. Like behind their back.
Yeah. That part.
I think, like, for me, like, the film really, I think this is really well done as well for the film. Like, language as a means of survival for them. Like, to not, to, like, withhold information within their group, but also as a way to, like, not be accessible for everyone. Like, their ways of being and, like, the ways that they communicate with each other are not known for other people, other white folks in the movie.
I think it could probably be a really interesting sort of like study or like perspective to look at the times in which even just Molly chooses to use English or her native tongue.
Yeah, because even Ernest, like, he picked up some of the Osage language at the later part of the film, which again, it's like shows a little bit of intimacy there, like genuine interest,
right?
Which really brings like to like, if we talk about intimacy and like trust, like I think Robert De Niro's character really made a strong impression on me as like, I think we all know that person. Mm-hmm. We all have that person in our life at some point. It's like the nicey person who's doing all the work of like respectability and like love, like in the name of love, but also in like such powerful positions to make those big, like life threatening and like life altering decisions. I just find it a little too close to the home, maybe.
This movie was initially supposed to be from the perspective of an FBI agent. Like, Leonardo DiCaprio was supposed to play an FBI agent going to investigate these crimes, and they, I don't know what caused them to, but they, Molly was a secondary character who then they decided to base the whole film around instead, her relationship with Ernest. Like, that would be the center of the film, rather than focusing it on some white FBI agent coming in to like save the day, right? Which that character is still in the film, but now in a much smaller role. Like, that's not what the movie's about, per se.
Yeah. what else have we touched on? We talked about Letterboxd reviews. We talked about Lee Gladstone's briefly, their performance. How do you think this ranks as we kind of like wrapping up our episodes? Like, how do you this?
Oh, yeah, we should talk about that. I don't have much else. Oh, but can I just say, when we're talking about Lily Gladstone's performance, I don't think, let's not forget towards the end where she's being literally slowly poised. Yeah, at the end of the film, can you hear me?
Yes, go.
I was just saying, at the end of the film where she's being slowly poisoned, that was some great acting where her body is so weak and she's like, that was a great highlight of her performance for me. And also a really big highlight of the film. Like Molly is like this, as we said, steadfast, like pillar of the women in the community. And so she's like the final one that Robert De Niro is trying to get rid of, and he has to do it in a way that's like way more creative than all the other killings, right? So I don't know, that was just a really impactful part for me. I really appreciated that part. That was a really big physical piece of her performance.
Yeah, totally. She was suspicious from the get-go, but I think, is it because she's the eldest? No, she's not the eldest, she's the youngest, if I'm correct, because last one in line.
I think it's I think Ernest, maybe even not realizing it, protected Molly from Robert De Niro as long as he could. And that's why Robert De Niro had to go about it in where Ernest thought he was giving Molly like helpful medication, right? So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Even though the scene where the last scene when Molly is fully recovered and she goes into the interrogation room and asks Leonardo DiCaprio what medicine did you give me? And I don't think Leonardo gave her the honest answer. And the way she kind of like took the answer was like so painful mm-hmm. and like it's like a painful realization that like the love was never kind of genuine. And how things have like turned sour so quickly. It's a little like nuances that she's able to like give life and kind of breathe into the role throughout the movie. It's definitely it's a really hard role to do, definitely.
I think she'll be like, obviously she'll be one to watch in future years. I'm excited to see what she does after this, because this is such a breakout role for her. I also really appreciate that Molly, I think, there's a dog barking. Molly represents like this idea, and you see it a lot in like indigenous studies and scholarship of the idea that can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The idea that like colonialism, obviously, how do I frame that? Colonialism obviously did not work in the sense of eradicating indigenous people. Like indigenous people, indigenous culture like perseveres and it will continue, right? And I think Lily Gladstone, Molly, is a like sort of a physical representation of that idea. And that for me is brought home because at the end of the film, like that whole final shot, which I thought was beautiful, was like showing the Osage Nation in the 21st century. Like that was a modern Osage Nation, which I thought was a really touching way to close off a film where clearly these people were there was an attempted eradication of these people, but they live on, their culture, everything lives on, right? So
right. I think this movie rings like it's really timely. I think if this movie was done like years back, and I think as a lot of like the social unrest and also the ongoing injustice, especially happening in North America, there wasn't a lot of discourse post BLM about like indigenous culture. Even me coming to Canada as a newcomer, I had no idea about the indigenous histories and still don't know a lot of it. So like in I think there's always like this conversation between nominations and culture that is happening outside, you know, in the real world. I think this movie is so like timely and it's so like relevant to like what is happening right now at this moment. Yeah, I had a fun watching this movie. Despite it might be a little long, but I totally understand.
Okay, wait. What do you think of the choice to, you know, the aftermath of everything being found out and the trial? What do you think the choice of having that delivered, as a radio show thing? You know what I mean? Like, there was so much that wasn't covered visually, but then Martin Scorsese comes out and delivers it as like a radio show monologue. What were your thoughts?
I actually had a note of that. I thought it was a little poor taste, I'm not gonna lie.
Did you? Okay, yeah, say more.
Yeah. I don't know, like, what's another treatment? Like, you have, like, you know, like, biopics traditionally, like, the Angela Bassett one, they have, like, text that has, like, written out, like, Angela Bassett did move on to, like, no, sorry. This figure did this in this year, and then in this year, and then they died in this year. I think the ending, like the ending scene, however you want to call it, like a radio show. How do you call it?
A radio show.
Yeah, it kind of like trivializes it, and it's like kind of like for like the audience to like kind of think of it. It's like a true crime way. Yeah, I did wrote down true crime. As a way for us to like look it back from a certain distance and doesn't really, you know about the history, but just purely reporting the facts of it, right? I think that is a little dangerous and not perhaps the most apt way to kind of communicate that.
So I think logistically that choice was probably made because they told Martin he cannot have a 4.5-hour movie, like, and he needed to find a way to wrap it up.
Oh, that's what you meant.
Yeah, but also I think that you're right about the trivialization or the spectacularization of it, but to me that read as kind of the point. Like, now we've just watched this really traumatic thing unfold, and now we're seeing it presented to this predominantly white audience as like some sort of like spectacle, and it really made me sit back and think about like me as a, like, it sort of brought me in as a viewer of the film, thinking about like what did I learn from this film, what do I carry with me beyond this film, like, was this just a spectacle for my entertainment, or should this be having some sort of lasting impact on me? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Or it can be done the other way around, right? Like, it can be like jumping 50 years in the future, and like it can be a camera panning to, you know, the modern day Oklahoma, and see, and like a comparison of like, where did all the Osage people go?
Right. I mean, they did end with that shot. The last shot is the modern day Osage people.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I almost forgot about it.
I think if it was intentional, what I explained was intentional, then I think that's a really interesting and smart choice. But if I'm just picking that up from it, like if I'm overanalyzing that, then I don't know.
Yeah. This is nominated for Best Picture, correct?
It's nominated for a ton. Yes, it's nominated for Best Picture. Let me
see. Best Actress.
It's nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Cinematography, Best Editing, Best Production Design, Best Costume, Best Score, Best Original Song. It's nominated for 10.
Who is the Best Supporting Actor?
Robert De Niro.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is I haven't caught up with all the Best Picture. How do you think this...
I think this is a real contender. I think this is a real contender to take Best Picture. Not only because I thought it was really a phenomenal movie, but also I think that it's impossible to ignore how conversations about culture influence Oscar voters' decisions, because they obviously do.
Yeah.
So
totally.
Let's talk about rankings, like, and then before we wrap up, let's talk about rankings. So we finished our Oscars month.
Hey, we did it, sort of.
let's do like from 5 to 1, your who you think deserves the award the least to the most. That's so shady.
Okay, the contenders are Emma Stone in Poor Things, Annette Bening in Naiad.
I thought you said contenders.
Contenders. Is that not the word?
That is the word, but then you said Annette Bening in Naiad.
Oh, we're throwing shade now. We're doing libraries now. We have Sandra Huller in Anatomy of a Fall. We have last week we touched on Carey Mulligan in Maestro, and this week Lily Gladstone in Close of a Flower Wind. So my first pick. Let's do it first.
No.
Let's
start on the
bottom.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Do we want to say it together? I think that's just like that's. We don't have to say it really. you're getting cut off.
Say it, bitch.
Okay, it's definitely going to Annette Bening in Naiad. I'm sorry, Miss Bening. Sorry for the slander.
Okay, wait. Do you want to do? Do you want to do your 5 to 1, or do you want? Do you want to do 5 and then I do 5? Like, how do you want to do it?
You do 5. You do your 5.
Okay, my 5 is obviously Annette Bening and Naiad. So, sorry.
Do we need to say more?
No. They can listen to the episode.
I'm going to put it out. 1 second.
Okay, who's
number
your 4?
Number 4. Do you have it ready? You go first.
I think so.
Okay.
I think my number 4 would be, and I want to make clear that 4 to 1, I think, were really fantastic performances. I think it's a stacked category this year.
Here we go.
I think my 4th place would be Carey Mulligan. And I think that, I think I stand by that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
My number 4 would be Emma Stone in Poor Things. I agree with you. It's fair. A tight race. Like, that now in retrospect, it's like a solid number 4.
For real.
And I do think there's like way more potential for Emma Stone to like really get out there. Like, maybe she doesn't need to collaborate with Yorgos Lanthimos anymore. Like, do your own thing. Like, I don't think this movie, it reads as like such a commercial and artistic success, but it doesn't just like, it's not there yet, I think.
Okay, who's your number 3?
My number 3 would be Lily Gladstone in Killers of a Flower Moon. Yeah. I think similar review, like Emma Stone.
Jeff, you know, no tea, no shade. Okay. We did whole episodes on these movies. I don't know if we need to give whole
blunder. No, we don't need to give context. Okay, I stand by it. I don't need to explain that. Sure.
Yeah. My number 3 is Emma Stone in Poor Things.
Oh, I thought you would give a number 2, but good to know. What's your number? My number 2 is Carey Mulligan.
Really?
In my show. Yeah, actually. Yeah.
Oh my
god. Now thinking back, I think for a Netflix movie, yeah, number 2, yeah, for sure.
My number 2 is Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon.
I wasn't expecting you to put number 2. I thought you were going to do it like number 3 or something. Okay.
I mean, so that means we have the same number 1 as Sandra Huller.
Yeah. Honestly,
That shocks me too. I didn't expect that from you. I said that I would. That was where my head was at when we did Anatomy of a Fall, and yeah. I was like, I don't want to pick yet because I haven't seen Naiad. Obviously, nothing changed after Naiad, and so I stand by that. But that shocks me that like, you chose that.
Why is it sticking around number 1 for you?
Pardon?
Why is Sandra your number 1?
I did say it in the episode, but I just feel like it was the most it was the most impressive performance with the least to work with. Like, such a...
Yes, that's such a great point, yes.
Yeah, such a expansive performance where... Kind of similar to why Lily Gladstone spoke to me, where so much is said and what's unsaid, but even more so. And she didn't have any sort of huge spectacle to sort of
costumes, work with.
Like, yeah, it was really just like, yeah. It was really a performance that had to rely solely on her abilities as an actor. And it was just really emotional and really confusing in all of the best ways regarding her innocence or her guilt. And it was just a really stunning performance.
Yeah, absolutely. In a very like,
I want to hear about you though. I want to hear why it's your number one.
I think looking back at it, I think I really like the dramatic of a stage presence and also a film presence. I think Sandra really really nails it in terms of like you said, I totally agree what you said, like delivering the most while having the least to work with. I think it takes a certain kind of expertise and experience to do that. And I don't think other actresses perhaps can take that role easily and do it. But I do want to just reiterate that I'm a Carey Mulligan stan now. I'm coming out of this year as a Carey. I love him. I love her so much. And also, my memeified brain is just so in love with the line reading that she does. Do you remember when the fight scene? I might be getting cut off, but your generosity conceals something dirtier and meaner. That has stuck with me for the past month or so. None of the lines from other movies are sticking to me, but like that line specifically, like that really have stuck with me for a bit. And in terms of memorable lines, if you're talking about that, but so that's my number one.
I think we'll wrap up, but I really have reflected on Anatomy of a Fall a lot, and I think I would be happy if Anatomy of a Fall sweeped. I don't think it will. I would be happy. I think it deserves best screenplay. I really do think it deserves best screenplay.
Yeah, it's going to go there.
And I think there's an argument that it deserves best director as well.
Sure. So. Even we should probably do like a bet, we can list out who are winning picks, and then we can, after the Oscar, we can post our results maybe.
Yeah,
or post it before. Yeah, we should probably do it, even though having not watched everything in the categories.
Thanks,
Oscars
everyone.
This year.
That was a fun month looking at
that
the
was
best
a fun
exercise.
Month.
I think we should do it again next year.
What do you think is the biggest takeaway if we want to do it again? Like next year, how can we make this more, you know, like more engaging or exciting? Like, and also, what are some of your biggest takeaways?
I was engaged and excited. I'm sorry that you had a horrible, boring time.
No, I had a great time. I'm just saying, we sound a little bookish sometimes, which, like, I don't know.
I'm sorry that we're smart. I'm sorry that we're so smart. It's hard to not sound so smart.
Girl, you don't have that problem.
I had a great time slandering the movie Naiad. That's my takeaway. It was fabulous.
That's elderly abuse, and I'm going to report you to the police.
Do it. I dare you. Anyways. You want to do it?
I'll do it. Thanks for listening to Film Fatales. We appreciate our domestic and international audiences across the globe. Thank you for tuning in. You can always find our podcast wherever you get your podcast from. You can also follow us on Instagram at Film Fatales Pod, where you can get memes, reviews, and previews of anything of that sort. Do you have any parting words of what to expect next week?
Oh, yeah. We are now going back to regularly scheduled programming, where we're talking about one actor. I feel like you should introduce her, though. Like, you're more in that realm.
We're actually tapping into the film fatales, like the femme fatales. Like, I think when I think about femme fatales, I think about Joan Crawford. I'm excited.
Well, that was not a big reveal. I need more drama from you.
We'll do it in post. I can't do drama. I can't do it. I'm not a dramatic person.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm excited to do this with you. Joan Crawford month. Let's go. Let's do it.
What's okay. What's our first movie?
It's 1932. I think it's the earliest movie that we've done this podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
It's called Grand Hotel. It's a black and white film. Can't wait.
Fun. Okay,
see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.